Adele was like constantly in trouble. Like she got stuck in a tree at
like
one
a cat.
And like, so she runs away. She climbs a tree. She gets stuck in a tree. Jane like climbs the tree to try to get her down. Rochester ends up finding them and like helps them when she gets unstuck. And then she's skipping away totally fine on a very smooth path.
Yep.
Jane is very worried about it. Adele falls and breaks her leg. Adele is...
She doesn't break her leg. She like scuffs her knee and starts crying like a 5-year-old.
She broke her leg.
Hello, Lillian. How are you?
I'm good. Kind of a, we just were talking before we got started, kind of a sleepy, stormy weekend.
It has been. Yeah, it's gray and it's wet, but that's an ideal setting for Jane Eyre, don't you think?
Absolutely. Gray and wet. That's how I'd always describe it.
So this week, we watched the 1934 film adaptation of Jane Eyre, which I thought it was so cool that it was the very first talkie to ever do this story. So previously, there are at least, I think, 5 silent films that were made. So this is the first one where people actually going into theaters could hear Jane's voice and Rochester's voice. And how exciting must that have been, you know, to be like, oh, yeah. Wow, taking this classic story to a new level of technology, sound. So,
yeah.
Like, and your face is so unenthused.
I would say that's the most, talking about the fact that it had sound is the best thing that you can say about this adaptation in my mind.
Oh, dude, I had so much fun with this one, as we will gather when I do my recap. So okay. If you are new to the podcast or to the story of Jane Eyre and have never read or watched it before, don't worry. We're about to sum it up for you as fast as I possibly can based on this adaptation. So
yeah, I've got the timer ready, so I'm ready when you are.
Okay, here we go. So Jane Eyre is the story of a young tween who is way bigger than her cousins and knows how to throw a punch and is good at yelling at her aunt. She gets sent to an orphanage where she's like, hell yeah, send me to this orphanage. Like, do it, I dare you. So she goes there. She then works there as a teacher. And when the Brocklehurst, the guy who runs the school, finds that her kids are doodling, she's like, well, you know what? I encourage art and I think you suck, so I'm out of here. So she leaves. And she gets a drunk chariot ride to a house, meets a man. They have great tea party time together. She, as an adult, by the way, could totally play for the NBA. She's got a giant build, which is great. She uses it to smash vases and protect children and do all kinds of other heroic feats, including saving a man from a fire. On the day of their wedding, because he's like, let's do this. She's like, cool, I'm into it. His wife runs downstairs and is like, actually, I'm part of this too. And she's like, wait, who the hell are you? Decides to leave because she's like, oops, he's taken. Goes off someplace and comes back when she finds out after working as a waitress in a church's soup kitchen that the house burned down. She returns to him and he's not really into it anymore, it seems. But she's like, I'm staying with you forever. The end.
So that we are getting longer and longer. We are just dancing right on a wave of our goal of being short. That was a minute and 19 seconds.
Okay.
So not as bad as my last one, but not our best.
Well, there are some important details that I felt I needed to throw in.
It's because the stories are getting, like, they're veering off our classic Jane Eyre track. And so we can't do the adaptations summaries as quickly because we have to call out the differences, my
well,
guys.
Well, exactly. Yeah. You know, that's the flavor. So I think sacrificing a few more seconds for the sake of getting these details in is okay with me.
So I sort of alluded to my initial thoughts. So what were your initial thoughts on this adaptation, Piper?
So I liked it. I thought it was cute and funny. I think it lacked a lot of the tension and passion that I look for in a Jane Eyre. But, you know, this just felt like a kind of a different story to me. I wrote down one of my main notes is that this feels more like a fairy tale, you know, about like a rags to riches thing. She goes from an orphanage to suddenly working in this great house. She's given pretty dresses. She gets to meet a nice man. They have tea. He clearly likes her. All of this nice stuff. And then, of course, it's on her wedding day that she finds out the whole scandal thing. But I don't know, like he was a nice man. And I loved one thing I loved that this version did is, you know, before he proposes, we see him speaking with his lawyer. He's trying to get the marriage annulled, which we don't see other Rochesters doing. And he succeeds, actually, after his mad wife comes down and ruins his wedding number two. He then gets a letter from his lawyer being like, it's cool. Like, you're annulled. You can be with the lady you love. But he loses her. She runs off. So I don't know. I liked elements of that. It was an interesting way to change it. But yeah, these are some of my initial thoughts.
Yeah, my initial thought is I hated it so much.
Why?
I hated it so much.
Why did you hate it so much, Lillian? Was Jane too massive and strong for you?
No, I would. I love a massive, strong woman. You know that.
I know. That was a test and you passed.
It was like classic. All the things that make Jane Eyre, Jane Eyre are like totally teethless in this. Like Rochester is a little like two-dimensional nothing character. Like I could push him over and find out he was cardboard and not be surprised.
He would also probably be like, I'm sorry, ma'am. I didn't mean to be in your way. Thank you for pushing me.
Jane is like never in a, like she's in a situation, like she's very intense as a person, which I think is great. But like, instead of being someone who like stands up for her morals and like has this like, whatever, like she is somebody who like had, like, she doesn't have risk at any point. Like there's when she quits or slash gets fired, she is like, I like called him a bad name, but don't worry, I have money, so I'll be fine. And it's like the same thing when she like leaves her job or like leaves Rochester. Like she has the same situation where it's like she's not actually risking much. Like and that's hard to say, but like she's immediately fine. Like there's no real risk for her. She actually says yes to Rivers. Like she actually is going to marry him. She's an hour away from marrying him, which like I think is meant to create like a tension of like, oh my God, is she not going to find Rochester? Dead now. I found her like a sort of annoying. Mm. And then also she was like really, really gorgeous and like feisty, but in like the actual feistiness, not like the kind of like that strength that Jane has. Like she just was more like, and then Adele was like constantly in trouble. Like she got stuck in a tree at
like
one
a
point.
Cat.
And like, so she runs away. She climbs a tree. She gets stuck in a tree. Jane like climbs the tree to try to get her down. Rochester ends up finding them and like helps them and she gets unstuck. And then she's skipping away totally fine on a very smooth path.
Yep.
Jane is very worried about it. Adele falls and breaks her leg.
She doesn't break her leg. She like scuffs her knee and starts crying like a 5-year-old.
She broke her leg. And just like every part of it is annoying. It's annoying to me that like Jane is like super blonde and pretty.
Yeah.
And I know I said that already, but like.
And that first night, like first of all, she comes to the house with nothing. And so it's implied that he gives her all of these clothes. And that first night that he like asks her to tea, she comes down in this beautiful gown. It's like, this is not Jane.
Yeah. I actually noted that down too. Cause I was like, when she got off the drunk man's cart, I was like, that sucked. And she also let him steal her stuff. And then it turns out that his name is Samuel Poole.
Yes.
And
wife to Grace or husband to Grace.
We've got to assume that he brought the stuff with him, like back to the house. So I do think she was supposed to, cause she like, we watch her unpack, which like, oh my God, we've talked about like, and I know that this is like, I have to give a little bit of like grace to the fact that this is like movies just got sound, like all that stuff.
They're just figuring it out.
It's not just bad. Like the 57 one was bad. It was a rough time. I would rather watch the 57 one than this because
oh my God.
That one was like terrible, but it was Jane Eyre. and it also did have things happen.
Okay,
yeah,
so
this one was like, sorry, I'm just, you have to cut me off.
I'm going to cut you off
for an hour about how much I hate this movie.
I need to draw some points, some counterpoints to some of your notes here. So yes, Adele constantly getting into trouble was ridiculous, but I thought a good source of humor. Like, that's what a lot of people on Instagram were telling us. They're like, oh my God, when she falls out of the vase, which is an incredible moment. Like, she's like trying to help clean the house in preparation for the party. And they're like, she, I think, is trying to like lean in here. She drops something into the vase, falls into it, gets stuck with her feet kicking in the air. And Shane comes in and smashes the fuck out of the vase to break this child out of it. It was incredible. But then also the scene where she gets stuck in the tree, like, I think this is I think it was supposed to be really funny because like the camera. So Rochester comes to see what's going on. The camera starts by looking at Adele in the tree, and Adele says, "My foot is caught." The camera pans down to Jane. She looks at him. Her foot is caught. It pans over to Rochester, and he's like, "I can see her foot is caught." It's like three times they did this. And then, I don't know. So I think it was supposed to be funny, but we get moments here too that are really sweet. I mean, this man is not Bronte's Rochester. But it's like, if, you know, viewing him as a completely different character, he's a nice man. He's her uncle, by the way. That's a change that they made because they didn't want to bring in, I think, the fact that he like slept with someone out of wedlock. They're trying to make this guy likable to, I assume, a 30s audience. But like when he gets Adele down from the tree, he carries her most of the way home. Like, he's very affectionate to her, which I liked. But again, he is not Rochester. He's Uncle Edward.
Yeah. And that's where like there's so many moments when I say this doesn't have teeth. There are so many moments that you can tell that they like the 1930s people are like, whoa, which to be fair, I think the 43 one was just shy of 100 years past the book Jane Eyre coming out. This one is obviously then less than that because it's 9 years prior to the 43. But it annoys me because it feels like they took this story that was making a lot of like points and like has this like philosophical, like all the things that we love talking about with Jane Eyre, where it's like, is it moral for him to do this? Is Jane doing the right thing? Like, what is the right thing in this situation? Like, does passion outweigh whatever? Yeah. There's no passion in this. They pull all the teeth out of this story. They pull the teeth out of Rochester. He is so boring. I hate him. I like the exact amount of soft boy Rochester that I want is 2006 Rochester. This man is so boring. I cannot say that enough. Like the movie is boring. They she didn't say the word hell. When they talk to little girl Jane about what happens after you die, she goes, well, you go to a place with like fire, and then like points down instead of like saying the word hell. Like, they can't have her say the word hell. They make him her uncle. So there's no question. It's not her dad. She's not French. She's a little English girl.
Yep.
Like, hated that.
This is so interesting, Lillian, because I feel like if I had shown you this version before you had seen any Jane Eyre, I feel like, because the things that you're pointing out about, you know, the teeth of the story, the whole point of Jane Eyre as a story is that it gives us these moral conflicts and questions and passion and all this stuff. And this movie has none of that. I feel like if this is the first one you saw, you probably would have been like, oh, this is a nice, quaint little romance. But now you know.
I can't imagine that I would have. Because I thought, so like, anyway, I can't imagine that I would have. Because the other thing too is like, Jane being super pretty, like, that's really annoying to me. At least they didn't pretend that she was super bland looking. Like, everybody acknowledged that she was pretty. Mm-hmm. And then like speaking of like taking the teeth out, the biggest change, they make Rochester try to get an annulment. Yes. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Like,
I don't disagree that that's like the way to make him like likable or whatever, that he's not even willing to commit bigamy for her. Come on.
Oh my God. Well, it's so interesting because this is the question I've always asked when watching any version of Jane Eyre. I'm like, why can't he get a divorce? And I've kind of looked into it, and there's all kinds of stupid things where they're like, oh, well, like, she's mentally ill, but that's still not grounds for divorce. And it's like, what, why, what, what? So yeah, like, at least we see him like answering a question that I feel like a lot of the audience often asks. But yeah, so I don't know. It is what it is.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too is like getting an annulment, at least my understanding of it, I don't think he could have, like, from my deep understanding of marriage laws in England in 1847, I don't think he could have. But also, even if he could have, then he also doesn't have the ability to take care of her. Like, that's the thing that is, that makes Rochester an interesting three-dimensional, not cardboard cutout man.
Yes.
Is the fact that he is still taking care of her.
Right.
Like, is he fulfilling his obligation as a husband by taking care of her? And then on top of that, I understand that she's like not okay. Like, she's laughing in the room, but you want to talk about a Bertha that's actually not crazy? She comes downstairs and says, "Hello. Oh my God. Husband, are we renewing our vows? Who is this?" Like, that's totally the most lines that Bertha has ever had. Mm-hmm. Fully cogent, doesn't get upset until they go to take her upstairs and like lock her away. And also, smallest fire in the world. It was smaller than the 57.
Well, we couldn't even really see the flames. Like, there was one shot where, I mean, first you see the candle like kind of going near his face to confirm that he's sleeping. And then I think it was just like the quality of the footage, but it looked like she like held the candle to the curtains for like 5 minutes. They just did not catch. And maybe they were, but we couldn't see the fire well in the film. But then, yeah, so like it just felt very anticlimactic.
And then also, like, she doesn't laugh. Like, it's not like the ghostly laughter. Mm-hmm. It's a crazy person scream. And yeah, Jane reacts more than our other Janes usually react to hearing Bertha. Like, our other Janes, when there's like a mysterious laughter, they're kind of like, "What was that?" Jane like actually goes out to hallways, and Miss Fairfax like, "Hi, that's nothing. Don't worry about it. Everything's fine."
She just goes back to bed, back to writing her journal. Like, I was like, who is she writing to? And I think it's just like a personal log.
This really intense, like, you dial up Jane's intensity to an 11. You make her like more intense than any other Jane we've ever seen. And then she's also just like, fine with the fact that there's like full-fledged screams, not crazy laughter, full-fledged screaming.
Yes. Yeah.
What are doing to Bertha in that attic?
I don't want to know. But so I think it's interesting. Like, you say that Bertha coming downstairs at the wedding and being like, "Oh, are we renewing our vows?" as a proof of her sanity. I actually found it interesting. I thought that could be an interesting way of seeing her madness, that, like, you know, she kind of lives in this delusion that she's unaware of, you know, certain cues and things like that, to come downstairs and just be like playing along. It's like, everything's fine, la-di-da. But I don't know. Yeah, you can definitely read this in a lot of different ways. But
while you're getting back on your train of thought, I'm going to talk about two other like random, but very, like, very much Air Buds review important, not necessarily critic review important. First of all, there are no bonnets in this movie.
Yep.
I looked, there was a lot of top hat. He ran into the burning building with a top hat on.
Well, because he was wearing his riding clothes, Lillian. He went off to chase her down and had to turn back.
I don't know why, in my mind, it's very similar. It feels similar to like people taking off their shirt instead of their shoes when they jump into a river in a movie. I for some reason, my brain was like, you should take your top hat off before you run. But no bonnets. And so that's like big con, right? Mm-hmm. Biggest pro. I wonder if you can guess what the biggest pro that this movie has.
Oh, for Lillian, who I would have guessed it was Jane's like shouting at everyone, but I don't know. What's your pro?
Second dog. There is a puppy in this movie. It's the cutest puppy. Rochester buys Adele a little puppy. And then when Adele asks, did you get Miss Eyre a present as well? He did. He got her a book, which is cute. I will give him that.
Yeah.
No, he's also like peak gas lady too. Like, she literally says, she actively says to him. So he like does all these like cons to her and like has her redecorate the room thinking that she's doing it for Blanche.
See, I want to talk about that. Okay. I thought that was a plus, but go ahead. Keep on your thought.
Takes her to the jeweler. Makes her try on earrings. She gets really upset. And then she asks to go on vacation and he like doesn't correct. She's clearly upset. He doesn't correct her at the time. Like, he doesn't correct anything. She goes to leave. He's like, "Hey, so it's actually for you." And she's like, "Oh my God, why would you do this to me?" And he's like, "No, no, no. I just like wanted you to love the house and I wanted you to love the jewelry. And then I thought you'd love me." And then she goes, "Okay, I get it. This is your one mistake." And then she literally says, you must never deceive me again. And then immediately afterwards, there's the screaming. And she's like, what is that? Happens all the time. What is that? Dude, like, you have to tell me. What was that? Like, I just asked you to not deceive me anymore. Like, this is your chance to say that is actually my soon to be ex-wife. And then he goes, instead, after she's made it really clear that honesty is going to be an important part of their marriage going forward, believe me, you have nothing to worry about. Mm-hmm. And then I threw my computer across the room.
Oh my God. The scene where she says, you must never deceive me again. I'm just thinking of like in Arrested Development when it's like the narrator's voice would come in. It's like, but he would deceive her again.
And that was him deceiving her again.
Yeah.
Like just, there's no subtlety to this. Like just.
So I want to talk about his gifting of the decorating of the room. So that's the thing. I think, you know, it's tricky with these kind of like surprise presents sort of things. Like I think it technically, I thought it was kind of cute. It was a cute idea. You know, obviously she's misled and is very emotional. And so he didn't read the signs or the room well to to deliver this gift properly. But like, I do think it's kind of a cute thing of him to be like, oh, well, you know, why don't you help me design this room? You know, I need a lady's opinion because I might get married soon and I want to make sure that the lady likes the house. Wink, wink. And she's just, you know, so convinced that it's Blanche and everything. So she's like, I don't really want to do this, but she goes and she picks out the things that she likes. And I liked that, like, both he and the like designer are like, oh, you have exquisite tastes. And she's like, yeah, well, okay, whatever. And then like with the jewels and everything, I think he's kind of trying to like hint to be like, obviously this is yours, wink, wink, wink. But she's just so sad because she just, you know, thinks that the man that she loves is just toying with her and then going to toss her away. So I did like the emotion that she felt when he's like, try on these earrings. She's like, I really don't want to because she loves them just like him. And she's like, oh, once I take them off and some other lady is going to wear them. And it's like with this guy that she likes, it's like, well, you know, you're teasing me with this happiness that I want, just to like know that I have to give it up. But for him, cause he's, you know, has all the information. So he's the one who's like, no, this is really sweet and fun, but you just don't know yet that this is a gift for you. So.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like cause we've had obviously a staple of Rochester's is that they gaslight her.
Yes.
And they've got their like sort of deluded reasons. They think it's the right thing to do. What was annoying about this wonder bread of a man was he was super boring and like didn't have any passion for her, but did have the opportunity to gaslight her and did do that. But instead of being like, oh my God, I can tell that you're like visibly upset and asking for time off.
Yeah.
Like if he had, I would have agreed with you that it was cute if he had like had her do that and then, and like had the designer and then like went and looked at the jewelry. And like, I was thinking to myself, like, oh my God, I bet he's going to like have her try out an engagement ring and be like, this is for you. Like that would have been cute.
Yes.
I would have been fully on board with the whole thing if it had been like a plan to propose to her. Mm-hmm. Like if this had been the way he was proposing to her, I would have been on board. But instead, he lets her walk out of the room sad and be sad for days. They finish the room.
Yes.
And he goes, she is like packed up, ready to leave, like trying to leave without saying goodbye to him. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, okay, so you know how you've been like sad for a few days? And you know how I like almost explicitly said that I was marrying somebody else? Like, you know how like all this stuff? Turns out I actually love you. And then she has a lot of grace and is super explicit with him, mm-hmm. that like, this is just actually like your one shot, dude. Like you messed up one time. And then again, like the reason Rochester lies to her in other adaptions about mm-hmm. Bertha is because he doesn't want to put her in the moral position of having to commit bigamy. He mm-hmm. is going to take on all of the negative soul consequences of this, of like the pain of that. Like he's deceiving her to protect her morals. Mm-hmm. That is an interesting conversation about whether or not he should do that.
Yes.
He is getting an annulment. He is lying to her to lie to her.
It's very much him just being like, it's cool, man. Once the paperwork comes, like then I'm scot-free, which I wrote this down, by the way. Okay. So we have the scene. Let's just play out a scenario here. Mm-hmm. So Jane is at her wedding. His wife comes down, says, surprise, I'm the wife, blah, blah, blah. He finds out that he's just gotten the marriage annulled so he can now marry Jane. Let's just say he was able to, like, catch her and convince her to stay, right? Here's the thing. Even if, you know, he explained everything and she believed him and she's like, this is cool, I get it, you were in a weird position, but now we're going to get married. What is he going to do with Bertha? Like, because before he, like, says to her, he's like, I was taking care of her because, you know, I'm her husband and that's my job. But if he's going to marry Jane, is he going to kick her out into the street? Or are you going to be married to this guy, but then also have his crazy ex-wife living in your house? And I'm like, this is not good either way.
Yeah. It's you take by taking away the like impossibility of the situation. Like there's no good way for Rochester to deal with Bertha and Jane. Like, right. Yes. Like that's the interesting thing. Like, what should you do in that situation? That's what makes this story so compelling and worth talking about. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can have these truly morally gray characters.
Yes.
Doing crazy things. But they're in an impossible situation because, like, what is he supposed to do? Like, what is there is no right thing for him to do in this situation. So that's the question. Like, that's the thing that's interesting about it. So by introducing the possibility of an annulment, you're making it so that if he does that, then he has to be honest with Jane. Mm-hmm. Like, if he's going to get an annulment, then he should tell Jane that that's what's happening. And he then like, what have you been doing up till now? But
right. Yeah, no, seriously. It's a lose-lose scenario.
And I also think that they sort of allude to the idea that he started the annulment process because he's talking to the guy about the annulment at the party that Blanche is at. Mm-hmm. So they allude to the idea that he started that process for Blanche. So right. He wanted to get married. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to marry Jane. Like the lack of passion, like you get to be morally ambiguous. Like you get to make these shitty choices because you're so caught up in the passion of love. Like, should society's rules dictate you? Should this like external idea of like what right is dictate you? Or should you follow your passion? Like that's the question of Jane Eyre. And they took all the teeth out of that.
Well, Lillian, you make a really good point. Because another thing that I was like noting earlier too is, so when it comes to Blanche, he has a line that he says to Jane after he's proposed. He's like, oh no, we broke up after London. So like he went to London, came back, he like broke up with her. So you're right. Him being with Blanche was not a gaslighting to get Jane jealous. It was literally him being with another woman and then deciding, actually, I love my governess more than this lady. And that's the one that I want to get my annulment for.
And it's the idea that, that Adele had that conversation with him, right? Like the idea that like that maybe like when they first meet, like that felt very love at first sight to me. Like what you said about the idea of it maybe being more of this like fairy tale romance. It's like they kind of introduced that but didn't go all the way all out with it. Mm-hmm. They like really genuinely made him like the most boring man. Where like it's not even his idea that he's in love with her.
Yeah. No, I want to talk about the love at first sight thing because he's up there in the soft boy category when it comes to, you know, first meetings. He doesn't yell or shout at her. You know, he falls off his horse and he apologizes.
And the horse fully falls over, which we've talked about. When he falls off the horse, that's actually on him. And when the horse falls, that is on the horse.
Yes. So his horse like rolls onto him. He doesn't break a leg, thankfully. But yeah, so he's really gentle in the beginning. But then when he asks to have tea with her, there is, I thought, a pretty cute moment because she comes down looking way too gorgeous in a beautiful dress. They're having tea, which, by the way, did you notice that really cool tea kettle mechanism? The tea kettle is like suspended up on this hinge. And so she just needs to like tilt it forward and then it'll like pour the tea. And I was like, well, that's cool. And she's like talking to him and he forgets to answer her because he's so like, you know, lover boy, has hearts in his eyes looking at this pretty lady. So that was cute. But again, like that's kind of part of the fairy tale vibe, more less so than the kind of gothic romance.
Yeah. And then we have to watch her sing a whole song like this. That's the other thing that I like sort of alluded to earlier, but I didn't specifically like give examples of, is it's boring. Like this, it's not only like it fully isn't Jane Eyre. It takes all the Jane Eyre things and like throws them in the trash. And then we watch her sing an entire song that is so clearly that actress being like, look, I can sing.
Well, I think that actually plays into the whole like first talkie movie thing, right? Because mm-hmm. they're like, yeah. It's like when you see a 3D movie when we were like in middle school and all the objects are flying at the screen because they're like, we've got 3D technology now. It's the same thing. They're like, Jane isn't an artist in this. She's a singer and a one and a two and a three. She like goes into her song.
Yeah. We have to watch her watch a whole song. We watch her unpack her bags at one point. There's so much, like, we watch her write out whole ass things, and then they gave us an opportunity to read them, and it's a crazy kind of cursive that I didn't bother reading.
Dude, I did. I struggled to read it. I was like, this cursive is hard to read.
I, like, tried to read it.
This is a movie, not a book.
Exactly. I was like, I literally wrote down, I thought this is a movie, not a book.
You did? Yes. Oh my God, same brain.
It's so good. I was like, I'm here to watch an adaptation of Jane Eyre.
Yeah, not read Jane's diary. Thank
but they
you.
Also like, so they do, I thought it was an interesting way to do like a transition and like time jump forward when they like flip through the books, the pages of the book and showed us the like page, the time jump where it said like she did 8 years as a student and 2 years as a teacher and stuff mm-hmm. like that. I also thought it was like, that's another like, bizarrely pulling out the like social commentary of Jane Eyre to yeah. make it an orphanage.
Right.
Like her aunt sent her to an orphanage instead of a school for girls. Like, mm-hmm.
yeah, no, it was, that was so interesting. And they even called it out too, where I kind of love the scene where her aunt is like in her bedroom after this fight. And she's like, well, what if I send you to an orphanage? And she's like, do it. I'd rather be in an orphanage than with you. And she literally screams at Aunt Reed. She's like, get out of my room. And it's like, holy hell, Jane. So I loved that.
Yeah, that was, it just, yeah, they're just, I'm just not a fan of this version. It's like all the boring, it's super boring, but then still like, the characters do shitty things.
Yeah. There was, I'm looking over my notes here trying to find the silver lining. And one thing that they did well that I thought was really cute is, so when Jane goes to save him from the burning bed, she pulls the curtains down and beats them to death because she's so strong. and then wakes him up and he's like, oh man. And he's attending to her. And this was cute. Whereas before in the William Hurt version, she hurts her hands by pulling roses out of a vase. Mm. In this, she burns her palms by handling these burning curtains, and he notes that and he kisses her hands. Yeah. And that was cute. He's like, oh, your poor hands, they're burnt. And then he goes away, and when he comes back again, he inquires about her hands. He's like, are you okay? And she's like, they're all healed now, everything's yeah. good, thanks for asking.
Because Jane's a superhero, which I yes. think if I was watching it and we were redoing this version, I think that's what I would do, is I would make her like for real like an alien or something, where like she actually has like superpowers.
Amazing.
And that's why she can break the vase and stuff like that.
I just want the Wonder Woman theme to play when she's like da na 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 na, like coming in and doing anything.
Well, if you tuned in to this episode going, I wonder if I should watch the 34 adaptation of Jane Eyre, and we haven't talked you out of it yet, which, wow, what a cool thing that has happened to you. That's my recommendation to make it good, is like, watch it as if she is a Clark Kent character.
Yes.
Like
yes.
she's Jane Eyre, but isn't she actually Superwoman?
Let's talk about the party real quick, because there were some details here that I liked a lot narratively and visually. So he asks her to come to the party. She's been pacing up in her room, hearing it going on downstairs. Like, she feels left out and is sad. Last minute invitation delivered by Fairfax, which understandably she's mad about. She's like, if you wanted me to come, you could have invited me earlier. So I love that in kind of a form of protest, she starts to like unbutton her dress as if she's going to change it to a nice gown. And then she's like, no, I'm not pretending along with this guy. So she like comes down in her school dress uniform, and he comments on that. He asks her to dance. And as they're dancing, he's like, why didn't you put on one of your pretty dresses? And she's like, I don't want you to forget who I am. I am your servant who you invited last minute to this party. Very inconsiderate of you. So let's not pretend that I'm one of these fine ladies that you can wine and dine. Because obviously, if I was, and that's how you saw me, you would have invited me sooner. So that was interesting. But we got to see them dance, which was cute.
Yeah, it was cute. I'll give him that.
Adele plays a game with some old men where they ask her.
I did like that.
Yeah, they're like, hey, what does Mrs. So-and-so look like to you? And she's like, that's a giraffe, and that guy is a turtle or a frog. And they're just like having fun with this girl. So that was cute. But yeah.
Well, I've got a lot of facts about the cast if we're ready for that.
Yes, do that. So
Virginia Bruce was the name of the actress who played Jane. She was 25 when this came out. This was one of those examples where I'd heard of this in old Hollywood things, but looking at her IMDb, it was wild to see. So I don't know a lot about old Hollywood, but something that I have heard is that actors were more like employees of different production studios. So they were on contract with someone and then they would work with whatever and they would get paid like essentially a salary. So she was in 10 movies in 1929. She was in 11 movies in 1930. She was in 5 movies in 1932. And she was in 3. So all of those were like smaller parts, but she was in 3 movies in this year. She was like a main actress in 3 different movies in 1934 when she played Jane. And then after that, she's in about 1 movie a year. So she was in like 3 to 10 movies a year up until 1945. So from 1929 to 1945, she's in multiple movies a year.
Wow.
And then she's in 1 or 2 or some TV shows until 1960. So she's in a ton of things. She's all over, which, and I think that just from like looking at posters and seeing other things from this, I think it's very similar, like strong, like this Jane is really based off of this actress's kind of typecasting. That made it make a bit of sense as well. And then the actor, Colin Cleeve, did you recognize him by chance? I don't know that you would have seen the other big movie that he was in, but did he look familiar to you at all?
Not really. What movie is he from?
So he was in the original Frankenstein in 1931. He played Dr. Frankenstein in that. So not Frankenstein's monster, Dr. Frankenstein in that, and The Bride of Frankenstein, the sequel of that.
Cool. It's funny. I, in the last year or so, got on a big old horror kick, but mostly it was the movies of Hammer Horror, which was like a British studio. So they also did a lot of the big movie monsters, but it wasn't like Universal's classic Frankenstein and werewolf and all that stuff. Man from the Black Lagoon. It was the same kind of monsters and things, but it was with Peter Cushing and also the guy who's Count Dooku, and he's also in Lord of the Rings. That's like where they got their big start doing those horror movies. So cool. Nice. But that's neat. Frankenstein.
So tragically, he did die really young. He died at 37, just 3 years after this movie came out. So that's a little sad fact about him.
Does it say how he died?
I didn't look up how he died. I just saw that he died really young and was like, I'm going to find a different fact. that was his sort of big claim to fame, is that original Frankenstein character.
Cool.
And then, so the young Jane was another one. She was a classic child star in the 20s, actually. So her name, according to all of her credits, I would be floored if this was her real name, is Jean Darling.
Yes, definitely stage name, I would assume.
And she was in it was all these like short, they referred to them as short movies, but they felt like TV shows, just like TV episodes based on their frequency. Mm-hmm. But it was called Our Gang. And I don't recommend looking it up. It looks like maybe they did a lot of racism. Don't worry about that. But she was in those. And she played like, that's like the name of the character is Jane. Like it's clear that's where her like persona came from. Mm-hmm. So she was in a ton of things. Then she was in another movie in 1934 when this came out. She was 12 years old at the time. And then she wasn't in anything again.
Maybe
until 2013.
Whoa. What was her 2013 movie?
She was in, I can't even remember the name. It was like this weird movie thing where she, so she was 90 years old in that. She lived until 2015, but she went from like child star. I think it was like, I think it based on like looking at the poster, I can't remember the name of it. You guys can look it up yourselves. Her name is Jean Darling. But like, that was just the wildest IMDb I've ever seen, where like, it was like, so she was in 2013. And so I was like, oh my God, she's probably been in things forever. And then you jump back and it's like 1934.
Oh my God. You know, she probably is like, I'm going to go to school, meet somebody, start a family, and then do one more movie before I die.
Yeah. And it was like, it wasn't a surprise to me to be like, oh, she was a child star. She was in things as a little kid. And then they were kind of over it.
Yeah.
Which we did talk about the fact that she was like a romper at, she was 12 years old playing Little Jane, like large child. So if you're a child star, she was clearly on the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
But my goodness. So those are the facts I have about the cast.
Well, neat. My last thing that I want to talk about this adaptation and this story, I kind of said this in my recap, but so there's, like you say, like a lot of the staples are taken away. So she doesn't hear his voice on the wind. She meets the drunk driver. Mr. Poole is now homeless. Who knows where his wife is, but he comes to her soup line and he's the one who tells her about like what happened. And so she goes back to find him. I really felt like when she returns to Rochester, there's like zero interest in him to pursue her romantically anymore, which again is like, okay, you liked it when you had all the cards, but now that like you're blind and you lost everything, it seems as if you're like, well, I'm not into this anymore. And in a lot of other adaptations, there's like a kind of hesitation from Rochester because, you know, it usually comes from when she says, I will be your neighbor and your nurse. And he's like, no, I don't want your pity. I want love and kisses and all this other stuff. But in this one, like, isn't it Mrs. Fairfax walks in, as does Adele, who is still around, so that's a good thing. And she's like, what's going on? And Jane's like, I'm going to be with this guy forever. And then the music swells and the like rolls to credits. And I'm like, I don't think he's into it anymore, lady.
I think that's a reflection of the lack of interest, like the whole time. Because like she does say, like he does say, I don't want your pity. Like that's, they like try to make that seem why he's saying no to her. But maybe it's just because he didn't ever care about her personality and only ever thought she was hot because now he's blind.
Yep.
I just was like, oh, again, I didn't even stand out to me as particularly unique, not to say, because I think you're right. I think it is unique as you talk about it, but it didn't stand out to me because he's so boring the whole time.
Anyway. Lillian was just so checked out at that point. She's like, oh, good. It's done.
I was like, oh, this has got to be over, right? 2 minutes? Okay, you can do this. You can do this. 2 more minutes. You just got to keep your eyes on the screen.
And Lillian's dislike for this movie had nothing to do with a migraine or anything else.
No, I didn't have a migraine when I was trying to watch this. It was just a bad movie.
So would you like to go first with your rating?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to surprise anyone that this is like by far my lowest rating. I'm giving this 3 out of 10. We'll go with pilots because there were good dogs in this.
Yeah,
so all 3 points are because of the two dogs.
Lillian, I think that's the lowest rating anything's gotten so far in our show. Because didn't we say, even for like the 50s one where he's a drunk, that we at least gave it a 5 because we were laughing?
We'll have to go back and look. This is why we need to level set our scores, because this is just pretty wild.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to give this a right down the middle 5 out of 10. And for this one, I will go with Timmy D's just to keep it basic. Because, it had stuff that gave
basic.
It gave me some genuine chuckles. There were some things that I thought was interesting that they addressed. But yeah, you're right. Like there was none of the forbidden love, which is what we come here for. At least it's what I come here for. I'm like, oh, you shouldn't, but you should.
Yeah.
And none of that had any, it just wasn't in this film. So it's it's whatever. It's a 5 out of 10.
They made a movie and that movie had sound. And that's what I can say they did.
Yeah. And the lady sang.
Well, next week we are going to do another adaptation of Jane Eyre. I know you guys are floored that that's what we're going to do. We are this time going to watch a movie that I'm sure someone has recommended to us. I usually do a good job of tracking these down. I went to look to see if somebody had recommended to us and couldn't find it in my list. So if you were somebody who referenced this, or if you would have anyone to take credit for it, please send us an email, airbuds@gmail.com or a DM on Instagram. But we are going to watch the 1970 movie with Susanna York and George C. Scott. And Piper was mentioning she has actually seen this one before and she thinks I'm going to love it.
No. Oh, yeah. I think you're going to love getting angry at it. In my memory, because I watched this when I was first kind of obsessively watching as many versions as I could find. And it was my least favorite of the ones that I watched on my own. I think the guy plays a very angry, distant, unlikable Rochester. So I feel like we'll just have to watch and then see how we feel now that we have some other Rochesters to compare him to. But yeah. And Lily and I were also talking before we started recording today that after that, we've got a couple of interesting new episode formats that we want to kind of try out to do some reflection on. You know, these are the ones that we've seen so far are kind of the major ones that a lot of people talk about. And after that, it's going to get into, we're going to try and find some of the international films. We would love to get our hands on some silent films, but these are adaptations that are much harder to find. So if there's a version that you know about, that you have access to, that you can share with us, or at least tell us where we can find it, please reach out to us so that we can continue this journey and watch as many as we can. But
yeah, we have a list. There's a lot more adaptions. We're not giving up, but we obviously that would be wild. we've got even some already hard ones that I've got kind of lined up for us. So we're going forward, but there are some that we're particularly looking for. And we really want to watch the ones that you guys know. So if there is one that you're like, this is really cool. There's some radio adaptions that I'm trying to figure out how we can get access to those. But if there's anything that you have, like just a couple examples, the 1910 silent film we're trying to find access to, that looks really cool. We will find that. But if you happen to know how we can watch it, please let us know. same with the 63 BBC miniseries version. Just a couple examples of ones that we're trying to find. But if you have one that you love, that you know how we can watch, please email us, airbuds@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @AirBuds.
Yeah, we would love to hear from you guys. And together, I'm sure we can get our hands on every single version. Mm-hmm. Even if we have to travel to watch it, gosh darn it.
Yeah, we'll just show up at BBC headquarters and be like, do you still have this on film? Can we watch it?
We'll go on our own little national treasure to the National Historical Archives and find it.
Yeah, it'd be great.
But yeah, that's all we have for you today. So if you want to join us in watching the 70s one, I'm pretty sure I also saw that on YouTube. Otherwise it's on some streaming services. So watch that next week and then tune in to hear our thoughts and we'll see just how angry this man can get.
I'm so excited. We always want to know how angry can Rochester be.
So until then, we'll see you later, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.